from KQED.
Welcome back to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. The House Judiciary Committee announced this morning that it plans to vote Wednesday on whether to hold Attorney General William Barr in contempt of Congress after the Justice Department missed today's deadline to produce the unredacted special counsel report. Meanwhile, Treasury Secretary Mnuchin faces yet another deadline today to tell House Democrats whether he'll turn over President Trump's personal income tax returns and those of the Trump Organization. The latest deadline follows the California State Senate's vote last week to bar any presidential candidate who fails to release 5 years' worth of tax returns from appearing on the state's primary ballot. We're going to talk about the latest developments and the continuing tensions between the Trump administration and Democratic lawmakers. Joining us here, Amanda Renteria in studio, chair of Emerge America. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thanks for having me here.
Glad to have you. And Republican strategist Sean Walsh. Walsh is also here with us in studio, principal at Wilson Walsh, George Ross. Good morning, Sean.
Thank you, Michael.
Let me begin, if I may, with you, Amanda Renteria. Let's talk about what options do the Democrats have. I mean, they've got two deadlines today. You've got the president's tax returns, and they've also got William Barr clearly not coming to testify in front of the House of Representatives. And Jerry Nadler has kind of laid down a bit of a red line here. What should he do? What will he do?
That's right. Well, you know, I think we're reaching a point where every Democrat shouldn't be surprised that we're going to really take this all the way to the line and understand what our Constitution says. And you're seeing that now. I mean, it's unusual that Congress doesn't have the unredacted version or the full version of the report. And so I don't see Democrats backing down, particularly leaders who feel like this is their responsibility and their duty. And so as we go through each of these steps, while they might be well aware that they're not going to necessarily get what they want, they can't stop now. Many of them really, when they went and gave their oath, you know, the oath of office is a sacred moment. And I think that is ringing true in a lot of these congressional leaders right now.
And Sean Walsh, and some congressional leaders' thoughts are on a verge of some kind of constitutional crisis here. I mean, the Democrats feel they have to act. What, from your perspective, should they be doing? Even have Republicans who say it's okay with Barr to testify. Lindsey Graham has said that, right?
Yeah, well, I'm not sure why we have a constitutional crisis. I mean, Mr. Barr has said he's willing to turn over a pretty extensive report. In that report, even less redacted than the report to send to a larger group of members of Congress. And what he's saying is you got to go into a SCIF, which is a secure room, no notes, no anything else. You can bring your staff in and look at it. But he also has constitutional obligations with regards to not releasing grand jury testimony, executive privilege, and there's a host of other issues with regards to protecting privacy of people that were involved in this. So he's got legal obligations as well. So I think that Mr. Nadler is vulnerable to a little bit of politics. He was caught on a cell phone on an Acela train to D.C. kind of talking about what he was going to do with investigations. He didn't care if it was popular. So I think the congressman doth protest too much.
And what about the deadline? And we'll hear from Amanda Renteria on this as well, about the president's tax returns. I mentioned that California State Senate said that you can't get on a primary ballot. It was a bill put forward by Scott Wiener and Mike McGuire unless you turn over 5 years of tax returns. But that notwithstanding, we've got a deadline on tax returns coming out of the House of Representatives, too.
So that's silly at the state level. So Article 4, Section 1 of the Constitution prescribes a state's role in elections, which is basically time, place, and manner. So it means polls can be opened from such and such a place. They can go vote in such and such a location. But the Supremacy Clause rules, and it actually states in that article that the federal government has supremacy over the House in these election matters. So it's a silly, you know, I think, political stunt on the members of Congress for that regard.
Well, let's talk about the federal, though, with you, Amanda Renteria. You've got Charles Pettig and Steve Mnuchin essentially resisting this. In fact, Charles Pettig, who's head of the IRS right now, I think President Trump's returns are still under audit, are they? But he has said publicly that he has interest in hotels in Honolulu, which have the Trump brand to them. There's a lot of serious questions here about getting the president's tax returns into the hands of the Democrats, and they want it, and there's total resistance on this.
That's right. And, you know, it's been out there for a while now. And I think one thing folks are missing quite a bit in this discussion right now is that this is not just about what is possible, what is not, but what does the public want to see? And the only way to have that kind of discourse is you are seeing California weigh in. You are seeing California really get frustrated with what's happening at the federal level. And so they're starting to act. Some of this is, you're right, they might not have jurisdiction, Sean, but at the same time, right now, you're beginning to get a public who's engaged in this conversation, and the way to make sure that the public really knows what is happening is to have this kind of dialogue across the board. And so are more deadlines going to be missed? Probably. But is it really important for many of these congressional leaders or elected leaders, state and federal, to make sure that the public knows what's going on? Absolutely. And that's why you see this conversation continuing. And even though Democrats know they might not get what they want, it's important for people to see, for the public to see. That is part of the jurisdiction of elected leaders.
And there is a perception in the public, and I'd like to give you on this, Sean, that there's just a stalling process here. The president doesn't want to give up his tax returns, and the fact of the matter is that the legal process is on the way by the House Ways and Means Committee chair.
Well, I've argued on this program and before, I think the real problem potentially for Mr. Trump is not this Russia collusion and not obstruction issues, but it actually is taxes. And it may be when the big Great Recession hit, all developers ran out of cash and banks were not willing to give them liquidity.
So maybe the Deutsche Bank, which is also—
Well, that's exactly. So, and you saw some movement on Deutsche Bank last week. So, you know, they went from the personal wealth side, who then said, okay, we'll give you as much money as you want. So, and it's not just a problem for the president. I still think at the end of the day, the reason why Mr. Barr did what he did is you can't indict and prosecute a sitting president. But that doesn't mean you can't get your son who's running the company, and you can't get your son-in-law who's running the company, and you can't potentially get any other members of your family that are involved in that. So I think that's the real threat. On the tax side, too, the law states they shall be released. That is the operative term, meaning they have to actually release those if requested. Now, you have to have a reason that they're going to be
shall
released.
Provide, I think, is the
But the shall language. Is yeah. Shall means you must under law. So I think that's where they got to, regardless of this whole Mueller memo, I think that's where he has a bigger legal challenge on not producing those documents.
And Amanda Renteria, what about the Republicans insisting and actually Richard Barr talking about spying and looking into the campaign with the FISA revelations that have come out, or supposed alleged revelations about things that went on the Democratic side, particularly with respect to Peter Stroke and Lisa Page?
I think that that's the tried and true, the best defense is an offense. And so I think what you're beginning to see is Republicans trying to grasp at different ideas so that you can take the light off of what we really should be focused on, which is what really happened, what is going on, what has Trump done, and more to the point, how do we make sure that this kind of behavior, that any interference, all of this, how do we make sure that our democracy is okay at the end of this and public institutions are trusted again?
Is it okay, Sean Walsh, for the Richard Barr has pretty much suggested and intimated that there ought to be an investigation by the DOJ, in other words, and Congress of the Clinton campaign?
Well, I think there ought to be sanitizing sunshine on this whole thing. It is highly unusual that you had members who had spouses that worked for the opposition research firm. Who was then paid for by the DNC and I guess indirectly the Clinton campaign to do that opposition research. You had against FBI policy news stories that were generated in the media to then generate those FISA warrants. I mean, it just smells bad. So from my view is if the FBI didn't do anything wrong, they should welcome the investigation and get everything out on the table. And this whole thing should be done. The whole Trump report should get out from Mueller, and the whole what the genesis of this should get out too, because there's a lot of doubts. And just as you say, people in California and Democrats have their doubts and they want to see the full Mueller report. There are Republicans all over this country who feel like this guy may have been set up. He may have been spied upon, that you had people in the intelligence community that unmasked people that were involved in the Trump campaign. So that may not be true, but have the investigation, have the congressional hearings, and let all of it see the light of day.
You know, all of that could be said about the Trump report, about Special Counsel Mueller coming out there. And I think we will see all of that. And those are questions that I think congressional Republicans, Senate Republicans could even ask to say, you know, what's happening here. And so I think it is important that we understand the full scope of what happened, as well as have the discourse of what we're comfortable with as a country and not.
But here's President Trump saying, I have been completely exonerated. I mean, he passed the 10,000 mark, according to Washington Post, in terms of lies. But said, I'm completely exonerated, and Robert Mueller does not need to testify, and I don't want him to testify.
Well, and it's not the executive branch's role or even the investigative role to make sure that the public knows what's happening. That's congressional role. That's why these hearings are so important. It's because it's the one place where the public gets to see what happened, who says what, how they say it. And that, to me, is more important, in fact, when we have this whole discussion about whether or not we have this proceeding, whether there's an impeachment vote. I think in and of itself, the process is really important because we're negotiating our Constitution as we are part of this process. And it's a way for the public to see what is really going on.
Since you mentioned the I word, we'll be talking to Tom Steyer in the next segment beginning after the 10 o'clock news. But what about this argument, Sean Walsh, that the president really, I use the word constitutional crisis, the words constitutional crisis before, and, you know, seem to get your hackles up a little bit. But, you know, being on the verge of something here, which really, if the president holds tight and says, I've been completely exonerated, I'm not allowing, with executive privilege, Bob Mueller to testify, we could have a constitutional crisis.
Perhaps. How is the president going to keep Bob Mueller from going and testifying? He's done. So Bob Mueller can walk out the front door and say what he wants to say within the limits of violating grand jury testimony or ongoing investigations. He's a bright guy. He's very focused and disciplined. So I don't think the president could stop him from talking. Now, just remember.
Could Barr stop him from talking? Barr is actually over him in hegemonic power.
Possibly, but, you know, his investigation is done. So he's not an employee of the Justice Department. He was brought in specifically for this purpose. Barr could try and stop him under the fear that he may release information that's part of an ongoing criminal investigation or grand jury testimony.
But forgive me for what it's worth. Barr said it's okay if he testifies. He's already on record as saying that.
I've said this from the start. I think that with regards to this investigation, President Trump should have welcomed it, had it go as quickly as possible, get everything out on the table, and get past it. Because if he did nothing wrong, he's got nothing to worry about. Now, with regards to obstruction, I mean, I think the collusion is pretty clear. With regards to obstruction, historically, obstruction is witness tampering, conspiracy. Witness tampering, trying to bribe someone, a host of other issues. Generally, you don't think about a guy who walks out in public and tries to intimidate people or tell staff something. So that's, I think, where the gray area is with regards to whether Mr. Mueller didn't draw any sorts of conclusions. And I think Mr. Mueller operates under the administrative law section of the Justice Department, again, that said you can't prosecute a sitting president. So go in front of it, let the public have their say, and be done with it.
Let me bring our listeners into this discussion. In fact, we invite you to join us if you have thoughts you want to share here or if you have questions or comments generally. You can join us at our toll-free number. I invite you to do that now. The number to call, 866-733-6786. Again, please feel free to be part of the program and join us now at 866-733-6786. Or email us, forum@kqed.org, or go right to our website and post questions or comments there at kqed.org/forum and click on the segment or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. And you can also go to our Facebook page, Sean Walsh with us, GOP consultant with and a principal at Wilson Walsh, George Ross. He served on the White House staff of Ronald Reagan and George H.W. Bush. And Amanda Renteria, also with us, a Democratic strategist and chair of Emerge America. They seek to recruit and train Democratic women to run for office. And we'll go to your calls and emails here forthwith. Amanda, I have to ask you, though, about obstruction of justice. I mean, the feeling is that the Mueller report pretty much lays out a map for the Democrats to follow. And yet you usually have to prove motive with obstruction of justice. And you've got a lot of entanglements there and labyrinths.
Somewhat, but you know, when you look at this, when you read volume two of this report and you see 11 different narratives where Special Counsel Mueller lays out the concerns and in fact also gives potential motives as well for obstruction of justice, I think that's when, you know, Democratic leaders need to step up and say, what do we do with this? Because it's certainly out there, certainly can't close the book. And so we're going to see where these next steps are.
Can you answer a question from a listener named Alan who says, can Trump actually prevent Mueller from testifying before the House of Representatives? I think Sean implied no. But what is your take on
that? My understanding is no as well. But it's going to be a process. And I think the one thing that's a question is what kind of delays can happen within this process, right? While we're working out where is the line? And one of the things I've said often, whether you're a candidate running against a president, whether you're a congressional leader in a negotiation with them, every single time he will test the limits of our Constitution, of the legalities of his office and others, and other public institutions as well.
He can keep Don McGrath from testifying, right?
It's
it was his private counsel.
Correct. There's a lot of lawyers taking a look at this, and I'm sure right now, having spent time on the Hill, right now they are lining them up, which one they have more ability to bring forth than the others, and they're going to spend time working through that list.
Sean Walsh, he can use executive order to keep McGrath, can't he?
Well, actually, attorney-client privilege is somewhat of a sacred thing in this country. So,
like with Michael Cohen?
Well,
no, I'm sorry. McGrath, though, did testify 30 hours with the Mueller
investigation. Yeah, voluntarily. Yeah. But the issue is with regards to any of the conversations that they actually had, I would argue that attorney-client privilege does apply here. Now, if there was a determination that there were criminal activities that went on.
I'm sorry, I'm saying McGrath and I mean McCann.
So. So there's still some debate on whether actually push came to shove, whether an attorney can turn on their client in those discussions. But anyway, I honestly, if you're going to go there, there's so many other ripe places you can go before you try and test the bounds of an attorney-client privilege.
We'll be talking about McGrath in the next hour. That's another story. But in the meantime, let's take our callers here. And let me begin with you, Stephen. You're on the air. Good morning.
Thank you, Michael. Yeah, and this actually has to deal with the issue of whether or not Don McGahn waived, not the attorney-client privilege, but executive privilege. And it appears to be that, well, first, it was interesting that Attorney General Barr, in his responding to a question from Dick Durbin, said, "We have not waived the privilege," which reveals his bias because he doesn't represent the president. But with regard to the waiver of executive privilege, it seems clear that they waived it at least perhaps three times, once in allowing the interview, second in producing documents, and third in not redacting on the basis of executive privilege that portion of the Mueller reports related to what he testified to. So I don't see, and usually when you invoke a privilege, you do that on a question-by-question basis. You're not able to block the entire testimony of a witness on the basis of a single privilege, whether it be attorney-client or executive privilege.
Yeah, thank you for that, Stephen. Amanda Renteria, go to you first.
Sure. These are exactly the kinds of questions that we're going to have. We are going to have a real investigation about where is the line. That's exactly why you have so many counsel right now in the Senate and in the House working on this. And as you've seen, both congressional leaders has really beefed up their staff because they recognize we're going to go through the legalities word for word. And you know, this is where our Constitution is going to be tested in a real way. Separation of powers. Where is that line and how do we move forward?
Sean Walsh.
Well, I mean, you can go all the way back to the Nixon impeachment proceedings where the legislative branch actually inherited some executive branch powers with the Jaworski hearing where they used some of the grand jury testimony. So that moved the needle in that direction. I will just say the last time and the only time any cabinet officer was ever held in contempt of Congress was Eric Holder. It was on the Fast and Furious.
The gun running scandal. And that was back in 2012. Well, they could do the same, obviously, with Barr.
Well, they can, but the point I'm trying to make is, so that happened, and it takes a long time. So you call in the referee, the third branch of government, which is the courts. So the courts went in, and they started to make determinations about what was relevant for executive privilege or not. It takes a long time. So that was not resolved until after President Obama left office, and they had a compromise about what they were to release and not release. So my only point being is, if people want to have this fight with Bill Barr, I'm fairly certain it will take years of litigation and action.
But they can censure him. They can find him in contempt.
Sure, they can. Absolutely. And he'll be number two person in cabinet history to be found in contempt. But so what? They can't arrest him. They can't prosecute him because they don't have that authority. And if they tried to prosecute him, they would have to go back to Bill Barr.
Well, Nancy Pelosi said he's guilty of a criminal act, and that sounds like something that should be prosecuted. Amanda Renteria?
That's right. And people are going to step up and follow that trend. But one thing we have to be aware of here is this. Yes, we can define the legalities of it, but the important public discourse here is a piece of it as well. And so the idea that this president or Bill Barr are going to keep people from testifying is that actually is a message to the public about how people feel about the facts that are out there.
Well, I don't think Bill Barr has kept anybody from testifying, and he's already gone in front of the Senate. But the so the Article 1 of the Constitution defines the powers of what Congress has and then what the executive has. And so there's no compelling dictate that says that you can go in front of Congress and then have to be cross-examined by staff. He went in front of the Senate. He testified. With regards to Nancy Pelosi and lying, so Bill Barr is a really, really smart lawyer. I work at a law firm. And so when he went in front of that hearing, where you go over a period of time where you feel like you're going to get trapped, you only answer specifically that question. You say nothing more. So if you look at the transcript of what he actually said, you could argue he was being misleading per se because he said that I'm not aware of any issues with the team report, even though Mueller had some issues, but he only answered the question and nothing more. And that's what lawyers do all the time and what they advise their clients, because you get into trouble if you don't. So
is he the Attorney General of the United States, or is he President Trump's personal lawyer like Rudy Giuliani? There are many who are saying the latter.
Well, I can't tell the difference. It seems to me the way he's messaged the Mueller report, the way he answered questions in the Senate, it seems that he is, in fact, right next to the president as opposed to being attorney general of the people.
Well, let me read something that William writes. What do your guests think of Madam Speaker's concern that Donald Trump would not give up power voluntarily if he'd lost reelection by a slim margin? And let me get your thoughts on this, Amanda, because there is real concern about this from the speaker and concern particularly because President Trump says, I've lost 2 years because of that Mueller administration. They took 2 years away from me.
You know, I say this over and over again, which is we should not be surprised by any formal or informal means by which Trump is willing to push the envelope in order to win and to stay in office. Having said that, I also get concerned when Democrats create a higher bar for themselves. So the idea that Democrats have to win by a large margin in a presidential campaign seems to be just putting a bar for yourself or for the party in a way that I think you're just making it harder.
You're listening to the Forum program, by the way, and we're talking with Amanda Renteria and Sean Walsh, and this is a fundraising period for KQED Public Radio. For more information about how to support KQED, go to kqed.org. I'm Michael Krasny. We'll go to another caller here. That's you, Michael. You're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question regarding whistleblower statutes. Do they apply in a situation like McGahn is involved with or Mueller's involved with? In other words, if they really wanted to testify, could they be prevented because of attorney-client privilege and that sort of thing?
Well, I would argue probably that executive privilege and the Constitution would provide supremacy over a whistleblower. But honestly, I have not researched that legally. So that's just my speculation, but not a definitive fact in law.
You have any speculation?
I don't know
here?
Either.
No.
Well, I don't know.
Okay. Well, try to.
Well, I think.
Yeah, Michael, thank you for the question. Sorry. I can do a little research on that and perhaps find the answer. But in the meantime, let's get another caller on. Inder from Morgan Hill. Good morning.
Good morning. A couple of points. So on the grand jury side, it appears to me that the legal structure permits the courts to be approached for permission to release certain grand jury testimony. The Justice Department can be asked to cooperate with that request and join the Congress in making that request to the judiciary. We know very well that Barr is not going to do it, but there's no harm in asking and making it public that he's cooperating. Secondly, Barr can be asked to opine, or Department of Justice can be asked to opine whether any claims of full exoneration are consistent with the Mueller report. I think the answer is no, but I haven't seen anybody challenge them to do that, including in Barr's testimony. I wish somebody had said, now, do you think the president is telling the truth on this particular very narrowly defined question?
Amanda Renteria.
I suspect he wouldn't answer that question, which is why you saw congressional leaders really take him to task on what he would and wouldn't answer, what he has to answer and not answer. And that's the difficulty here, which is to the point earlier, Barr is going to stick very clear to what he has to say and what he hasn't said, and he's very careful about it. That makes it difficult to ask for questions like, what do you think? Because he simply won't answer them. It's also why it's important to have more voices at the table and bring in a lot more folks so you can really reveal the facts here and see how other people approach these questions.
Another question related to Mueller. I'm going to go to you on this, Sean Walsh. Julie wants to know, what is to keep Mueller from simply giving printed copies of his unredacted report straight to Congress when he testifies?
He would probably be prosecuted and probably go to prison.
Yeah. So, simple answer to a not-so-complicated question. So how is this going to play out? Anybody want to look into some tea leaves here and tell us what they see up ahead, particularly since there are two deadlines today? Your thoughts, Amanda?
I think we're going to continue to see more of this debate back and forth on who's going to testify, when they're going to testify. I do think we will see folks come to the Hill and have a conversation, and we'll see how far down Democrats can get in their witness lists. But one piece that's going to be important that you're going to see from Democrats, I think that's going to happen in pretty short order, is what is the message they want to get out from all of these hearings and really start to put that plan together, knowing that every single step of the way, they're going to see delays.
Sean Walsh?
Well, I think perhaps Mr. Nadler, I do think that Mr. Barr has put a pretty acceptable issue on the table. If I were the congressman, I would take it. I would look at the redacted versions in the skiff, and then if it raised additional questions, then go back at them. Take your three quarters of a loaf, and if you need the full loaf after you've looked at it, go that way. If they do find Barr in contempt of Congress, it's an embarrassment to the person who's found in contempt, but there's no real authority that Congress has short of the sergeant of arms arresting him if he goes to testify on the Hill for his budget, but he can't be prosecuted.
He could be impeached.
So he could be impeached. That's correct. But that's not going to happen either, because, again, there are two parts of impeachment. One is the House of Representatives, who is the investigatory, and then the judge is the Senate. And the Senate's not going to vote to impeach him. So that's a exercise in political futility.
Well, that brings us also to the fact that Tom Steyer is joining us in the next segment, and we'll talk about that with him, because there's now an effort underway. Not only he's been leading this effort to impeach the president, but now an effort to see that Barr is not Barr, as debarred, and has taken away. In fact, something has been filed, I believe, to take away his lawyerly credentials in the Commonwealth of Virginia. Thank you both for being with us. Good to have you both. And we will continue, obviously, to follow these stories. And again, Amanda Renteria is Democratic strategist and chair of Emerge America. They want to recruit and train Democratic women to run for office. And Sean Walsh is a Republican consultant with the GOP and principal at Wilson Walsh George Ross. He served on the White House staffs of both President Reagan and President George H.W. Bush. As I said, Tom Steyer will be with us in the hour ahead. We're also going to talk about McGrath as opposed to McCann. This is a millionaire in Piedmont who actually opened his house to a couple who had been on the streets homeless for, well, years and years. It's quite a story. Stay tuned. That's all up ahead after the news. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation, and by Jan Schramm and Maria Minetti Schramm, founders of the Minetti Schramm Museum of Art at UC Davis, which preserves the legacy of renowned artists such as Wayne Thiebaud for future innovators by dedicating a third of its space to arts education.